Happy Wednesday, Technically Female Tribe. It's Jasmine again here for yet another episode of our Technically Female podcast. Again, it is hashtag Ally August. I have another big ally for women in STEM and one of the biggest allies I've had in my career, Mr. Braska Williams. We met probably when I was in high school, so freshman year, and he directs the Math Science Education Pre-College Program for North Carolina State, and he has been so instrumental in my career journey. So, hi, Braska, how are you?
I'm doing well. How about you, Jasmine?
Can't complain. Another day, another way to share the STEMinism. And so I want to know all about you. Like, who are you? Let us know a little bit about your background in STEM and the awesome program that you direct.
Okay, great. Well, I'm a graduate of NC State University. Go Wolfpack.
Go Pack.
I have an undergrad degree in applied math and a minor in computer science. I was a computer engineering major actually for 3 years before I switched to math.
Oh, wow.
And because I decided I really wanted to go into teaching, being an African-American male. You know, most people never ever have African-American male as a math teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was something that was important to me, and I realized the importance of it. And so I went, after I graduated from NC State, I went to the College of William & Mary, earned a master's degree in education. I spent 5 years as a high school math teacher at my old high school in Newport News, Virginia. And then I spent another 8 years working in STEM education in my school district. It was interesting because of my engineering, 3 years for the engineering degree, my district actually recruited me because they won an NSF grant and decided to implement a STEM program for underrepresented minority students. And so they were looking at people and realized I was one of the few people in the district that had this engineering background and I had a math degree. And they were like, hey,
would
you like to run this STEM program? And I was kind of like, okay. And so, so essentially, we implemented STEM clubs in all of our schools from elementary through high school to create a pipeline for kids getting interest in STEM. So I did that for several years, and then had the opportunity to come back to NC State about 16 years ago, find out that NC State had a program very similar, which is called MSCN. And so here I am. I've been in STEM education for 20+ years. So.
Wow, that's a long time. So you've probably seen the ebbs and flows, the good, the bad, the ugly, the everything coming to STEM. So this is going to be a great conversation then. And so you mentioned, you know, you've been a part of the Math Science Education Pre-College Program. You've been managing that program at NC State for the last 16 years, and you've been connected to Kids Pathways to STEM Education for a while, like almost 30 years at this point. And so in your opinion, what gaps and disparities have you seen, whether it be in gender or race, when it comes to kids who want to pursue STEM fields and or STEM education?
Okay, well, I mean, there's a huge disparity when you start looking at the numbers and percentages of students of color who graduate from high school and go on to STEM to pursue, going to college to try to pursue a STEM degree. And, you know, when you look at that between our white and Asian counterparts, and I think mainly that's because there's so few students of color who take, you know, courses like pre-calculus, calculus, chemistry, and physics.
Yep.
Because without those types of courses, you can't really, you know, you're not even eligible to even go into college and major in something STEM.
Right.
And it's kind of interesting. I've started to see, which is great, I'm starting to see more and more women who are pursuing engineering and computer science.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting because when I was in public schools in the 90s, I started looking at my own school district's data and noticed that more and more women have been taking AP Calculus in large numbers. And actually, there are more women who take AP Calculus than men do.
Wow.
And that's been going on since the 1990s. But the issue was, a lot of women weren't taking physics and computer science in high school. And so that was where, that was kind of the thing that was kind of keeping, you know, more and more women who would go into engineering and computer science. And some of that's related to the fact that, you know, when you look at, you know, the people who teach computer science and physics tend to be white males.
Yep.
And so a lot of times they may not be as encouraging, you know, when it comes to, you know, women, especially minority women.
Mm-hmm.
And then still, even in our program, I noticed that, you know, sometimes we don't have as many girls who will take computer programming and coding, or we try to offer things like the Internet of Things to teach kids about smart technology, and so they learn how to use Raspberry Pis and some of those kinds of things. And so so there's some huge disparities when it comes to those things. But I think a lot of that, too, is tied to, for people of color, and especially I know I can only speak mainly to African-American parents, which I've been working with for a long time, we still don't see STEM as a vehicle for upward mobility than athletics. And that's something that's kind of been a frustrating point for me. You know, so a lot of African-American parents will invest in athletics. They'll invest in things like going to a basketball camp or going to AAU basketball, because they see that as, oh yeah, this is a great opportunity for my child to get a full scholarship to college, when actually you have a much better percentage and a much higher likelihood of earning, you know, going to college for STEM. Because, and then of course, if you have a STEM career, you're going to make money much longer over your lifetime than athletics, you know, which is really just a short window of really earning income and being able to get out of poverty. So that's something I've kind of, I noticed that, and so, you know, people sometimes have these crazy stereotypes that maybe Asian students are maybe smarter or more better than other students. Not that, it's just the parents really understand that, okay, if my child, you know, that math and science is something that can really open a lot of doors for them. And so they really are very aggressive with, you know, putting their students into, you know, STEM programs, or really kind of pushing them to take the upper level math and science class. And that's something sometimes across race that as African-American parents, we don't always do. Yeah. And some of that is tied to the fact, too, we don't have the backgrounds.
Right.
You know, so like my own parents didn't have that kind of background. So then therefore, but my parents understood, they saw potential. I guess they, for me, they had high standards and they never would allow me to quit. And so anything. And so I think that was big.
No, that makes sense. You hit a lot of big things. A couple things that stuck out to me, teachers and having teachers in the education system that look like you. I could name one black male teacher that I had ever in the science field. I had all white male teachers for engineering, for physics, and I had two female teachers, or maybe three female teachers ever in math, but a white female. And that really does make a huge difference. And with the caveat of my high school was a magnet school, so it was a huge focus on STEM. But that brings up another point of a lot of these schools do not have the resources to teach computer science or to teach various, to your point, building blocks that are fundamental from when you're trying to major in certain things in college. And I actually took computer science courses and physics in high school, so that I didn't even think about it that way. I was exposed to that early, so then when it came to college, it wasn't brand new for me. I had a little bit of exposure to it. And then also the point about the investment, it reminds me, I was telling someone the other day, a lot of people when it comes to scholarship money want, oh, I want the $100,000 scholarship opportunity, right? Because it's quick, it's easy, like if I get it, I'm set, versus let me do the incremental things, you know, the $2,000, $5,000 here to add up to the $100,000 that they need. And that makes me think of like athletics, because athletics, even though I will not take away, it takes a lot to be athletes and then to perform at the next level. I mean, the percentage of that is super, super low. And STEM is a little bit more difficult in regards to, you have to put in the time, you have to practice, you have to push yourself, you have to, you know, maybe study or do things that are more academic, more than getting to like have fun, which is similar to athletics. But, you know, knowing that, to your, you raised a really good point about if you invest in your kids and their education in STEM, you can even get, to your point, get more opportunity to pay for school than, you know, full ride to school for athletes. And you know, I love my sport, so it's very hard for me to say that, but it's a thing, because, you know, you could get to a scholarship to school for athletics, and then, you know, you get hurt, and you may not keep that scholarship, right? And so then your, you know, student is, or your kid is kind of messed up from that. And then another point you hit is parents understanding the benefits of a STEM education, and, you know, doing the research. And on my episode Last week, I talked with my parents, and unbeknownst to me, they'd been scheming and looking up, you know, what I needed to do to be competitive at a very young age, like in middle school age. They were already looking at what I needed to be doing in high school to be competitive in college. And so it's super, super important to utilize those resources and do that research to find out how your kids can be successful. And so why do you think it's important to, speaking of resources that have been successful, you know, I got exposed to STEM camps very early, a lot of early Saturday mornings for MSCN. I am not a morning person at all, so I didn't like that part. But, you know, I was in STEM camps every summer from, you know, high school and middle school. And so why do you think, in your opinion, it's important to have camps and educational resources for STEM outside of the classroom for kids?
Well, it's all about exposure. Mm. I mean, so, you know, a lot of times most schools, and I'm going to try to, so I mean, you know, especially for people of color, more people of color tend to live in more lower income areas. Mm-hmm. And so they may not have schools that really can provide the necessary exposure. You know, you may not know what a Lego robotics is or what an Edison robotic is, or, you know, you may not have that opportunity for extracurricular club after school and coding. But even if you do, I mean, just, you know, those types of programs, especially I'm a big proponent of STEM resources at universities because, again, I'm gonna make that analogy with the sports. You know, so what athletes do, they go to NC State's basketball camp or USC Chapel Hill's basketball camp because they're interested in that university. So, you know, they kind of get to see what the coach is like. They kind of see the facilities. Well, the same thing for STEM. If you go to, you know, an engineering camp at NC State or, you know, you came to our program with MSN, you know, not only are we giving you exposure to STEM, but you're getting to see the campus. Mm-hmm. A lot of cases, like, for example, our summer program, we're taking you to lunch, so you get to see the dining hall, what's like. And then, you know, I really work hard to have our admissions people talk to our students. My daughter's both won the Goodnight Scholarship, which is one of our big STEM full scholarships. But we had people from the Goodnight program who would come and talk to our students every year because it's all about that exposure. And so, you know, and so coming to a STEM camp is giving you exposure to different STEM fields, but it's also giving you exposure to that university. And so, you know, that's something that we really try to utilize. My youngest daughter, who's a freshman at NC State, she last summer spent 3 weeks at Washington University in St. Louis doing one of their residential engineering camps. So that gave her a lot of exposure to that. And then what happens usually, just like athletics, you know, a lot of times they become, if someone from that camp, usually those camps, there's faculty members who are involved in those camps, so they start kind of see you as a good student, so then they start sending you all kinds of mail about, oh, you know, we have this kind of scholarship, we have this kind of program. So, I mean, we were getting a ton of Washington University mail her, you know, fall of her senior year and into the early spring, you know, so those are the kinds of things that you receive by, you know, going to a STEM camp or, you know, kind of engaging with that kind of stuff.
Yeah, for sure. I hear it's definitely, I can align with you and agree with you. It's an entry point into college, potentially. Like, I know for me, I ended up going to North Carolina State because I got to do research in the lab, because I was so exposed to MSCN. NC State was all I knew for a majority of my life, but then I got exposure to, like, the opportunities and their education and their admissions and their professors and the research they were doing, and that even intrigued me anymore. And it also allows you to see if that university is really could potentially be invested in your kid and wanting to help them get to the next level of whatever their dreams are or hopes for are in STEM. And, you know, another good point you mentioned at the beginning was a lot of kids do not get that exposure because they don't have that resource at their school. And so that circumvents what they're learning in the classroom. And maybe they may have had a teacher that they just didn't click with, but it allows you to also circumvent that curriculum and maybe teach it in a different way or be more relatable or be more willing to, you know, be patient so that they can get that particular skill, which could set them up to really be more successful in their academic journey.
And I also want to add, a lot of times too, you go to a STEM camp at a university, usually, you know, you have people who have been trained to try to make it more fun, more engaging. You also a lot of times have students who are a lot of times involved in those camps. So, you know, you see someone who's close to your age, and, you know, especially if you're a young lady, and you see, you know, another female student who's maybe a counselor at that camp. That's like, okay, well, that somebody looks like me,
right.
And she's an engineering major or she's a STEM major, and so that can be very, that can be a very powerful element, so.
Oh, 100%. I mean, I just think about, you know, MSc and pre-college, like a lot of my friends that I still am close to, you know, 15 years later are in STEM, and, you know, we met through MSCN, and, like, two of my best friends were in MSCN, and we're all in STEM. One's a pharmacist, I'm in, you know, tech corporate, and I got another one that's at Fujifilm, and so it's just, you know, those, you don't even think about it too at that age, is the connection points. You're networking at an early age, right? You don't even realize that you're doing it, but you're learning to form relationships, you're learning to how to work on a team, you're learning how to do project work, you're meeting people from all walks of life, because usually these camps and resources are open to, you know, anyone that could go to your school or maybe not, and you're getting, again, exposure to how to deal with different types of people and how to build relationships and strengthen bonds at an early age. Well, I didn't even think about it that way, but that's a really, really good point. And again, some of the best people I still know and are connected with, that we've known each other for, like I said, years and years and years back into those STEM camps. it's wild, actually. And so I also want to talk a little bit about you know, encouraging women and young girls specifically in STEM. And I know for me, you know, that program is honestly what propelled me into STEM even further and pushed me. And so what actions have you personally taken to encourage young girls to pursue STEM fields? And in your opinion, what does true allyship for women in STEM look like? I know allyship is a big word right now in regards to, you know, race, and it could be also gender. And I'd love your opinion on what you think an ally really looks like, and how have you encouraged young women to pursue STEM and your experiences?
Sure. Well, so before we actually came on the podcast, I was sharing a story with Jasmine about just noticing as a employee, I was considering pursuing a PhD in math ed, and so I came back to NC. When I came back to NC State, retook Calculus 1 and 2, and so it was really interesting watching just a whole scenario where I noticed a young lady who was sitting beside me who was doing very well in the class. And so the instructor would ask questions, and I noticed that the young lady would never say anything, but I noticed the other young men would yell answers out. They were always wrong. But they were so confident in what they were saying, that was so wrong. And so it kind of, and so something in my head kind of, you know, again, having been being a teacher, and trying to encourage all students to engage. So one of the things that I kind of started becoming more aware of the importance of just encouraging, you know, all genders of students to participate in lots of different areas of STEM. So one of the things that we try to do in our program, we try to get our students involved in STEM competitions, whether it's, we have an MSCN day, which is like a big math science competition day, but we've also gotten students involved in other competitions, such as the Department of Transportation in our state has a bridge building contest. There's a competition called Future Cities, where you build the city of the future. So it's like a civil engineering thing.
Cool.
And so anyway, you know, when you have those kind of things, you have to encourage, you have to on purpose encourage young women who might not necessarily feel as though, because sometimes what will happen is you see a lot of young men who will gravitate to those things automatically, but if you notice that your team is all male, then you have to go out of your way to say, hey, Jasmine, have you ever thought about, you know, competing and, you know, being involved in our bridge contest? Or you see another young lady named Bree, and you say, hey, have you ever thought about taking our coding class? It has to be, you notice that, you know, the, if you look at a roster, in our program we offer some elective, STEM elective courses.
Okay.
And if you notice that the numbers are all male, then you have to go out your way to say, hey, so-and-so, have you ever thought about doing this, you know? Because without that, again, without that exposure, then it doesn't happen. Also, making sure that you hire, you know, women STEM teachers. So then that also helps a lot. So So those are some things. And then for my own daughters, and again, that's something that can apply for, you know, men who want to be allies to women in STEM. You know, of course, being a man, you kind of understand how other men think. And mm-hmm. so with my own daughters, I've had to teach them how to be assertive, you know, how to now allow men to make those, you know, if it's a group of guys and maybe one or two women, they'll feel like, oh, well, let me make this little sexist joke. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you speak up and immediately shut it down. So then
right.
they understand that that's not acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
And so teaching women to be assertive and understand that, you know, you should not allow someone to make disparaging remarks towards you. You know, that shouldn't, just because you have a job and you feel as though, well, if I say something, no, you should speak up and say something. Mm-hmm. And so I think encouraging that, and then also modeling that, you know, treating as a person who's been director of a program, you know, treating my female students with respect
mm-hmm.
and being encouraging and telling them that they're smart. And they can, I was involved a couple of years, about 5 or 6 years ago, the president of Shaw, who's actually at NC State, she has a PhD in chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
She and I came together and we sponsored an event called Brilliant and Beautiful. And the whole message was, it's okay to, you know, look good as a woman. It's okay to have, you know, your hair looking nice, hooked up, have your nails, but also it's okay to be a STEM professional.
Mm-hmm.
And so she would wear her lab coat, and her partner with this program also had a PhD in chemistry and was a chemist in private industry. So, you know, those kinds of opportunities and events that you sponsor are so important. And then we also sponsor a STEM Day event where we bring in STEM professionals. And so making sure that we bring in a lot of women
mm-hmm.
Professionals so that kids of both genders see, oh, yeah, there are plenty of women who are engineers. There are lots
right.
of women who are computer scientists. There are women who are doing all kinds of things. So all those kinds of things are important.
All are so, so important and crucial in each different way. And, you know, first seeing the potential and calling it out. When you were saying that, I was thinking, that must be why I'm always getting pushed all the time. So I was like, you know, I think maybe you'd be good at this. And I'm like, I didn't ask you. Like, I'm fine right here in my comfortable mm-hmm. little corner. But seeing that potential mm-hmm. and calling it out is so important, because I think sometimes what happens is people see potential in others, but it's more of a competitive thing. It's like, if I call that out to that person, then they may beat me, right? And it's not about that. It's about I see something in you that you may not see in yourself. And that can help propel someone to, you know, a completely different industry or a completely different, like, pathway. And then, you know, being confident and assertion being okay. Because I think sometimes as women, we feel like, oh, you know, if I say something, you know, in a certain way, it may be taken the wrong way. I should say sorry. I should apologize, you know, for my, you know, feelings. And I think, you know, it's there's a level of respect that you provide, but there's also a level of, you know, it's okay. My feelings are my feelings, and my feelings are valid. And I should feel okay to express and to support myself and to put myself first. And that goes back to the using your voice, right? Like, you have a voice. It shouldn't be silenced. You should be, you know, utilizing that, even if you feel uncomfortable. Like, you just never know what that one thing you say may impact the whatever you're working on. And it could be something that makes it more successful. And then, you know, just respecting women. I think respect is a huge thing. Not just women, but at this point in our country right now, of, like, respecting people. Like, people, my parents always taught me, like, if you don't do anything, you respect people, you love people, and you do it well. Like, that, you treat people no matter how they treat you, like, with respect, and that's how we carry ourselves. And I think we sometimes, you know, in the STEM field, people miss out on that just because they're like, well, you know, why should I respect you, or why should I treat you, you know, equal to? And so I love that also, the last part about intentionality with who you expose women to, because I think so often, you know, you'll see, oh, you go to this panel and it's all men. It's like, well, ugh, like, there's no one like me, so why should I even pursue that career? Like, I'm going to be by myself. And that can be daunting, right? Like, oh, I really enjoy this, but, like, do I want to be the only female? You know, some people are more confident in that than others, but I think the intentionality of, you know, exposing women to and connecting them to potential mentors is important. I also like the part you said about calling people out. Like, if you're a man and you see something, say something. If it's not okay. You know, you should address it. Because once people, you know, kind of get an idea of, okay, I know this, you know, this crap won't fly with her. I know this is not okay. You know, sometimes it's okay to check people a little bit. And I think we need that in order to grow. For sure.
Well, I thought something you just said, it kind of sparked a thought, you know, because again, think about, you know, when we, and I, again, I'm saying, I'm coming from a perspective as a man of color, you know, like when we, you look at a brochure or you look at maybe a panel and you see the panel is all white men or something, you like, you just kind of look like, okay, did somebody not think about this, you know?
Exactly.
So, you know, you have to kind of, you know, and I'm saying this now to other people who are listening. It's important that, you know, your panels, when you have a panel or something, or you do this photo that you're trying to represent your company, it has to be diverse, you know, because, you know, in America, we have all kinds of people, you know, so your panel should represent everybody. You should have Latinx folks. You should have Afro-American. You should have women. You should have men. You know, we can't just, I mean, you know, that kind of rubs me wrong when you see that.
Yeah, no, like, it does. Okay. It's tone deaf in my mind. I always say that's really tone deaf. Maybe we should think about it a different way, or, you know, it's very tone deaf. And so, one other thing to ask you, what is one piece of advice? I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit. What is one piece of advice you would give, to parents on how to best support a child, or even prospective parents, of how to best support a child who likes STEM? What's one piece of advice? You've given so much, but what's your, like, one thing that could be helpful?
Sure. I had written three. Well, I'm sorry.
I know, I put you on the spot.
I would say to encourage them to never give up or quit. Because, you know, my daughter right now is a math ed. One of my daughters is a math ed major in NC State. She's a junior. So, you know, so she's essentially like a math major, but she's, you know, concentrating education. And so, you know, anything, so when you take courses in STEM, there are going to be times where stuff is going to be hard, but you have to have a mindset that you're not going to quit. You're not going to give up. You know, if, you know, whether it's, you know, having to get help from the extra help from the teacher or seeking a tutor. And then also, I know I'm combining more than one, but I think the exposure part, I know I already said that, but the exposure is so important because, you know, your child doesn't know what they don't like until they actually, you know, dip their foot in the pool. Right. I mean, you know, they might take a coding class and like, man, this is pretty fun. Or, you know, maybe I'm in a STEM competition and I love the, this is pretty cool because this, I'm competing, but I'm competing in something academic, you know, versus something athletic. I mean, it's still the same kind of thing, you know. I used to thrive off of just the competition of, you know, could I beat out, you know, be the best student in the class, getting an A in my math class, or, you know, so I think just the exposure and just encouragement, I think those two things are just so key. So
yeah, and to your point, like, it's when you're doing it and you're taking classes and you're encouraging your kids to take other classes, like, that's a trial run. Like, at least it's, you rather them trial it in education than trial it in career, because it's harder to get out of a career and then they may be coming back to your house and you don't want that. So exposure and getting them, you know, at least if they take a class and they hate it, at least that's it. Like, again, it's a freebie. They're not losing anything out of it, or it could be something really good for them that they just, you know, wouldn't have known if they didn't try it out. I know I took a HTML course in high school and I was like, I don't know about this, but I loved it. I loved web pages. And I was like, this is so cool. I like went on my own little tangent. Like, the professor would teach me something, then I'd just go and do all this research and do other things. She's like, how did you figure that out? I was like, you know, I just played around with it. And I didn't know what I didn't know, because I'd never had exposure to it before. And so I, you know, it was a great class I took a chance, and I was like, either I'll hate it or I'll really love it. And so it's something that I like to do sometimes when I'm bored, or if I feel like that I just want to turn that part of my brain on a little bit and be creative. But it's this information has been so timely and helpful. And, you know, at the end of every episode of my podcast, I always ask my guests to provide a word to the wise. And so it can be a word, a statement, a poem, just something to empower the tribe and leave them with some encouragement through their STEM journey this week. So what is your word to the wise?
Well, I don't know if I was saying this when you were MSN, but I have a quote.
Oh, yeah.
And the quote is by a gentleman named Leonard Ravenhill. And the quote is, the opportunity of a lifetime needs to be seized within the lifetime of the opportunity. Oh. And so I know that's kind of like a play on words, but what it means is, you know, you get all, there's all kinds of, we all have opportunities, but sometimes you never know how one opportunity can lead to a whole nother lifetime of another opportunity.
Yeah,
and so true. One of the things I used to really try to talk about to our MSA and students, I would try to bring a lot of guest speakers. And, you know, sometimes I brought in someone who was a millionaire. You know, I brought in mm-hmm. someone who, you know, worked for IBM that was high up. And mm-hmm. and so the thing I always tried to teach our students was the importance of paying attention, asking questions, and engaging, because you never know the person you meet, how mm-hmm. that person can open a door for something else. And so, you know, you're someone who took advantage of a lot of the things that we did at MSN, and mm-hmm. it led you to now this path where now you're at Apple and, mm-hmm. you know, you're doing great things. But if you're someone who didn't take advantage of that opportunity, mm-hmm. you know, think about what your life would be like, you know, if you had not taken advantage of that. And so the statement again is, the opportunity of a lifetime needs or must be seized within the lifetime of the opportunity. And it's by Leonard Ravenhill. He's a British evangelist, but I heard that quote on a song years ago, and I was like, man, that's such a cool statement. And so that's something that I really try to really encourage people, because, you know, opportunities, it's amazing how you meet one person, or my pastor always says that all it takes is one person that you meet at a moment that seems random, but mm-hmm. it's not random, because yep. everything has purpose.
Yep.
And that meeting can be something that can change your whole life. And so just always living and looking for opportunities and taking advantage of them, because you never know what they open up, you know, as far as your life. So
absolutely, absolutely. Oh yeah, use that window of time that you have, because it's never going to come back, so you better be seize the day and take advantage of it. Thank you so much, Braska, for your vulnerableness, your keys, your gems. I, you know, all the great things that I think I now see full circle that have impacted me positively. And Tribe, I hope you are very inspired and empowered by our episode today. We will continue #AllyAugust next week. If you're interested in becoming a speaker or a guest on my podcast, reach out to me at technicallyfemale@gmail.com. And as always, share the STEMinism.